welcoming to the show for another fun all-star cast summary. It is none other than Ellie McConaughey, author and giant geek. How are you?
I'm all right. Nice to meet you.
Not bad either.
Hello, audience of people I don't know.
The audience is out there.
Oh God, that's a terrifying thought.
The audience is actually aliens.
Less terrifying, frankly. Are those blue-skinned aliens from Mass Effect out there? Because if so, they can. I'm going to stop that. I'm going to stop that train of thought right there.
Too late. I just got to open up. Oh man. So, how did you get into the beloved X-Files series before we talk about their beloved actors and other roles that we love them in?
I've been, the story is, I think I do tell it at one point on the act. So for those of you who haven't bothered to like click on my accreditation on the episode, I just finished a review of the entire series of the X-Files. And I do think I tell the story when it comes up, that when I was like 13, I live in Connecticut, but I was born in Alaska, and I was in Anchorage visiting my father over the summer because my parents were divorced, and you know, and the library in Anchorage had exactly one X-Files VHS tape in it, and that was Darkness Falls and the Erlenmeyer Flask. I didn't know anything about the Erlenmeyer Flask. I didn't know what the heck was going on there because it's a plot episode, but I was obsessed with Darkness Falls. I must have rented it like 12 times over the course of that summer. And then I came back to Connecticut for the school year and found out that my library here had all the first three seasons on DVD. And I was like, this is it. I'm hooked. I'm in all the way. Give it to me. As you know, you got into it the same way you got into a lot of things back in like the VHS era. You know, I'm walking down the library or the Blockbuster aisle and you go, that looks kind of neat. Let me see what's happening over here.
Yeah, there you go. It had a bit of everything for everyone.
Yeah. Except for my partner. They don't like the X-Files because they're frightened of bugs. And they think that half the episodes are about bugs.
Funny how that works. Oh, yeah. I pretty much was always connected to it in some capacity. I always, again, I had family that was watching it for a while. And then, you know, in the 2000s, it was just literally every day, like in either the afternoon or morning on TNT and Sci-Fi Channel, just nonstop. And, you know, just constantly being re-uploaded onto Hulu when it was just becoming a thing. And I was just like, yeah. And the DVD sets were always, you know, being reissued. And then there's the TV show Millennium. And then it's like, yeah, it's constantly just getting referenced in other shows. Just as, I mean, there's like a later Bones episode where they're like, I'll be your Scully until you're Mulder. It's just like, yeah, it's just, they can't help themselves. It's just still everywhere.
What I've actually discovered as I've gotten older and, you know, started interacting with people who are younger than me, 0 out of 10, don't recommend, or people older than you or people the same age as you, don't interact with people, is
damn it,
that
people.
a lot of younger people sort of have this idea in their head that the X-Files was like this weird cable cult show that wasn't really like well known. And I've like had to say so many times, no, this was like the biggest thing on TV for like 5 years there. Like it was Seinfeld or Simpsons level big.
It really was. If you weren't watching any of those other shows, then you're watching something else like Homicide or Law and Order or even just beginning level, you know, cable channel stuff like, you know, Oz and Sopranos. So, you know, it's just, you whatever you wanted to get hooked to, you got hooked to. And it was just big in that, yeah, it could attract any kind of people. It was going to attract the sci-fi nerds, the horror nerds, the people crime who wanted, people. Yeah, even the crime mystery people, as well as, people just cool writing and acting. And, you know, so then by the time I saw, you know, people doing marathons of shows that were on like every Friday, like, you know, there was Stargate and Battlestar Galactica. And then there was all other kinds of, again, just can't miss premieres. And when DVD first became a thing, you know, it kind of rode into that too. You know, it's just like when it finally ended in like 2002, it was still just a big, just talked about thing. It wasn't uncommon for UPN to do a knockoff or CBS to do a knockoff show every other summer that was heavily inspired by that. It's like, here's a conspiracy in a small town with a bunch of agents who are really good at solving, you know, abnormal things that might have a UFO or supernatural connection.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S., we are in the U.K., we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
I don't know if I ever went into this because it's sort of a tangential thing. So, like, you look at Mulder as a character, and you can see a very direct, like, lineage to him from Agent Cooper on Twin Peaks. The point where, like, David Duchovny was on Twin Peaks. And speaking as a trans woman, his character on Twin Peaks is, like, very important to me. And you also sort of get the sense that, you know, the X-Files understands that Mulder is really good at his job, but that he's also, like, as a result, not really a normal dude. And they can either play that for really intense...
Nagami's definitely not a normal dude, so that works.
They can play that for either really intense drama or hilarious comedy, depending on the scene. But you can therefore sort of see a direct lineage from Mulder down to all these, like, detectives who use some sort of, like, mental, in, you know, disability to become, like, what's it called? The one with Tony Shalhoub, Monk.
Yeah.
Or, oh God, I can't remember. There's, like, 50 of what's the really violent one? It had Inigo Montoya on it for a while.
Criminal Minds. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, he's like autistic or schizophrenic, right? The lead on that.
Mm-hmm.
I never watched it. My partner's being into it. My point is that you can see this like people sort of picking up what the X-Files is lead, like basically doing what Always Sunny did with the base premise of Seinfeld and like taking it off to more extreme directions. So they're taking, well, Mulder's kind of a weird dude, so he makes weird connections. What if we make them clinically weird and let our actor just run with that?
1,000%. It's like, that's the template. And I see so many people shitting on even earlier X-Files seasons too, and it's kind of like Star Trek, where it's just like, well, they didn't know what they had, so it's still going to be entertaining. You're still going to watch it a few more times. And I had the Trust No One podcast on when we discussed the entire like saga, everything, Millennium, Lone Gunman, X-Files show in the movies, and even the video games. And we were just like, and we had a few of them who were just like, we don't want to see Squeeze what anymore, or some of these other season one episodes. I'm like, well, see, again, it worked at the time. It might not work now, but it worked at the time.
It's really interesting. Like, you go back and you, like, I've been rewatching the show because I haven't rewatched season one since I started.
How can we not? It's fun.
X-Files review project. I used to do like a yearly rewatch of it. So I started this project back in 2015. So I haven't watched season one since then. And yeah, there's a lot of episodes that don't like really hold up. Like,
some of them don't go anywhere, but they're kind of fun because it kind of invites just that whole just slow burn, just come on in and just escape reality. And see, half the time, some of the episodes, they're not even I think we're just into people who just still want too formulaic. A formula still will just kind of, the reason, like, I see other shows that were inspired by this or Babylon 5 or other serialized sci-fi or horror shows. And the reason I just can't get into as many of them, like, I can't do shows like Lost or what have you, because at the end of the day, it really doesn't mean anything. And people just want to argue about what it did or did not mean. And I'm like, see, but they made it up as they went along. Here with, they might have had a 5-year arc in place, but they didn't know what to do with everything. And see, X-Files, they pretty much, by the end of season one, knew where it was going to go. And then just kept outlining it from there. Like, Cigarette Smoking Man is going to have a bigger say. He's not going to be the featured extra anymore. Scully's going to have this predicament where she thinks she's going to die, and Mulder's going to get kidnapped because we got to accommodate Mr. Duchovny. He's got to make time for her family. Oh, and he wants to be a movie star. How's that going? It's not going well.
It's really interesting, you know, coming back to it, to the new seasons. Cause like, Duchovny made them move the production from Toronto to LA and then left a season later anyway. Like,
they did everything in their power and it still didn't work.
And now, like, except for like Californication, Duchovny's not really doing anything in TV. Like, he's writing books and he's releasing albums and they're all fine.
So whereas, I'll sum like, it up for you guys. So.
Whereas like Gillian Anderson is like, she stuck with that thing all the way through, beginning to end, and now she's like, she's on Hannibal.
She didn't want any more, but after a while, and I couldn't blame her. I mean, so many people were kind of starting the rumor that, oh, she's a bitch, oh, she's stuck up. I'm like, here's the thing. She had kind of called the shots on how the character was going to be written, a bunch of other stuff, and she just thought they were kind of just catering to the lowest common denominator. Now, unlike most, I actually didn't mind those last two seasons that they came back with, despite spreading out over a year, but I think she had legit reasons. She's like, I'm tired of playing the role, and I don't like where it's going, and I don't feel like you guys can write for women anymore. I'm just like, okay.
I think the last two seasons are, how do I put this? I think that the problem is that the plot episodes get so much focus because there are some really, really good Monster of the Weeks in there, but the plot, like, I cannot stand any of the plot turns that they did in the new seasons. Like the reveal that William/Jackson was actually like an experiment from the Cigarette Smoking Man, throw it in the garbage. Get rid of it. worst plot twist. Like, and I know the X-Files is not above like retconning stuff because, you know, they retconned
every sci-fi horror show has to do it. If it exactly,
Krycek is by the end of the series a betrayal-based organism because they have to keep changing who he works for. Like, it's fine, but like, if you ever get another season, retcon the shit out of that. That's the worst.
Oh damn! I kind of dug the kid, but I kind of thought it was better than the second movie. But what do I know?
The second movie has got a lot of problems.
Oh man. Oh, it's funny. Roger Ebert loved it. He loved both movies.
I like the first movie. I don't hate the second movie. I just think that, like,
it's kind of become taboo in its fan base where they just, I don't know, I think audiences wanted to see more explosions and conspiracies, and it was more interested in just doing just a uncanny, just
that's another monster mystery of the week. I think that, you know, I mentioned Twin Peaks a minute ago, and you know, Twin Peaks season 3 is this like incredibly well known.
And then X-Files were kind of unofficial rivals, even though Twin Peaks was only on for like 2 years and X-Files came like a year later. Just kind of have both been embedded.
I've never really seen them as rivals. I think that like X-Files is very much taking down, it's doing what always kind of happens in art. You know, this very weird, very singular artist comes along and makes this very weird, very singular thing. And then someone else comes along and sort of processes it for the masses, where it's not as intense, but it's a little more palatable. But you have Twin Peaks season 3, which is this like incredible work of art. But then you look at like basically every other attempt to revive a long dead franchise, and they mostly just kind of suck. You know, we've got those Jurassic World movies just kicking around.
Well, and every franchise is in oversaturation now. Superheroes are all the rage, and everyone's like, the fans want more because now they want to see their favorite comics adapted. People who just generally like only popcorn movies will still always be there. And people like me are just like, I'm waiting for them to flop. They were fun for a while. I don't need them every single year. And nothing needs over 7 sequels, in my opinion.
Enough about that. We're talking about X-Files.
Duchovny is interesting in that he could be practically, these are basically their superheroes, super iconic roles. And I mean, I knew about him, you know, on Twin Peaks, and I'd seen him in some other TV movies. And my parents,
you've seen the Red Shoe Diaries.
You're right. My parents would always joke about that. Can you believe he went from Red Shoe to this and then back to Californication. So then again, he's back to being on a sleazy Showtime show. and then it's just so funny how, just the various actors would just always just like make fun of themselves. Like they cameo as themselves on cartoon shows. Like Jillian plays Scully on a Simpsons episode.
They both, I actually reviewed that one as part of my blog.
Nice.
That's one of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons. And that episode's like real funny. But it was released, I think that it was definitely released contemporaneous with the X-Files. Like that was back when the series was at its peak.
When it was just huge, and there was even an American Dad episode that made fun of a convention, and they have again characters that look like their persona. And but yeah, Duchovny, he made fun of them on a episode, was it? It was like a, was it also Simpsons? Yeah, it was a Simpsons episode. Okay, but I always got it confused because, yeah, they would sometimes play like a fictional version of themselves, like on some of the other cartoon shows like Duckman. And,
and that's always just kind of a fun thing to do.
Oh, totally. So I was definitely familiar with a lot of his movies. He had so many movies where he was not necessarily always like the first bill, but he was always part of a giant like ensemble. Like he's in The Rapture with future X-Files co-star Mimi Rogers. He was in Return to Me is probably his best one, where it was just a romantic dramedy with, you know, directed by Bonnie Hunt and had Minnie Driver. That's just an easygoing crowd pleaser. But then, you know, my sister was always watching Zoolander, where he's playing the conspiracy theorist, so it's a total reference to that. And Evolution also is basically a Men in Black meets X-Files parody.
I don't know if this is like controversial, but I don't think Evolution was very good.
No, it's not known for being good. It's way too lowbrow, even by, because that's what's weird is Ivan Reitman is clearly trying to recreate his you know, Ghostbusters dilemma, and it's just a little too much. It really is. It's just one of those where you're just like, okay, this would be an okay SNL like digital short. It goes on way too long, like you say. And like you say, some of the gags are just pretty dumb, even by dumb comedy sci-fi standards. And I think he's really good in California, no relation, where he, you know, that was an excuse for him to be in a psychodrama with a then unknown Brad Pitt and Juliette Lewis, Michelle Forbes. And it's kind of like every other psycho thriller where is I half the audience is going to like it, half the others are going to hate it, but you got to give it up to just the pacing and the first hour before it kind of feels like it got rewritten to just accompany the car chase crowd. But
it's interesting, you know, to go back over his filmography, especially as the X-Files was like coming out and as he was leaving it, because I think there was like a hot minute there where they thought like
he's gonna be the next movie star.
He's gonna be a big deal, and then like I don't know if it didn't work because he wasn't good for it. I mean, I've seen people make much more with much less than what he's got. Right. Or it was just like if he just picked the wrong projects. Like I recall liking Return to Me, but I don't think that's a very good use of your David Duchovny. I think if he's not playing Mulder, he's really good at playing kind of sleazy guys, you know?
Yeah, sleazy or just kind of funny, just like supporting roles. And I don't mean to shit on his talent or anything. I think he does have some talent in there, and he is generally very likable. I just don't think he had that much depth to a lot of the roles, and he wasn't able to bring it really. And I don't mean that. I say that as a fan. I just thought he was a little limited. And like you say, he did pick a few just turds that were just like, yeah, no one would have been that good. And when you're trying to do so much, you're trying to make time for, you know, famous actress wife, you know, Tia Leone, kids, and then, you know, do both the TV show and all these movies. And neither is really, the show is just, you know, by that point, just larger than life. People are revisiting it, talking about the outrageous, weird endings. It's kind of a breakthrough in that you could just do stuff that didn't have to cater to really any kind of formula, but yet anyone who wanted any kind of formula found us something for everybody. And it's just larger than life. You know, it could have literally been garbage for 5 years and it still would have been on the air for years. You know, it just had that kind of drawing appeal. And here he is. Yeah. He's trying to do movies. He's trying to do other shows. And it's just, I don't think he was able to kind of get it all together, but I will have to say this. Did you ever see Playing God?
I think so. The name's
yeah, that was familiar. A weird twisted. It's almost like a semi-punk cyberpunk episode. And it's even more wild seeing X-Files guest star Michael Massey, you know, who was on the one later episode where he plays like a Jim Jones type guy in a death cult and in a rare good guy role in this. But yeah, And the test audiences didn't like it. There was rumors that he and Angelina Jolie had a exotic moment in this movie that was excised from the final product. It's a harmless movie. It would easily appeal to so the comedy apparently hated it because apparently it was when they pulled a Will Smith where they had a movie greenlit without a script ready.
not a great plan there, no.
But see, I thought it was just a fun, just kind of like Eraser or Terminal Velocity, just a fun kind of PlayStation type, you know, spy, assassin, crime thriller. You know, it would definitely appeal to, yeah, an enemy of the state crowd nowadays. It's just that laid back kind of fun movie. And he and Jolie, you know, again, that was when she was just becoming a big star. And I thought they both had interesting charisma. I know Connie and Carlo was one of my favorite comedies for my sister and mother, and Nir Vardalos and Toni Collette. And it was just, that's just it. He would always get these just like ensemble movies, like the TV set and the Jonas's. And he's actually pretty decent in Phantom, which is a Soviet Cold War movie. Basically,
oh, yeah, giving... I did see that.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Years ago, like I went through, I think whenever you were like love his TV show a lot, you go through this like phase of tracking down, you know, oh, the creator made this movie, I'm gonna go watch that. And then, oh, the act, you know, that works out real well for Twin Peaks, not so great for the X-Files.
You're right. X-Files is like they couldn't keep up. And it's even funnier how this movie kind of bombed, but it was considered pretty decent by both critics and audiences, and there just wasn't an audience for it. It just, no one wanted to see a Cold War submarine movie. And as another X-Files connection, Lance Henriksen is the admiral who commits suicide at the beginning. So yeah,
I do miss, you know, when we had like middleweight movies, you know, movies that aren't like $200 million blockbusters, but also aren't.
He had his share of those too. He did this one movie called The Secret, which was like a remake of a Japanese terror film, and I saw it premiere on Lifetime, and I was like, I've never heard of this. This is depressing, but I'm going to check it out because this is an interesting cast and premise. But yeah, it seemed like he wasn't able to do that either. Like, he was doing a lot of indies that he was writing and directing, and they just were not taking off. Like, they wanted to.
I think with indies, you kind of have to be in the, unless you're really good, like you can count on critics going to bat for you. You kind of just got to be in the right time at the right, you got to be in the right place at the right time in order to get an indie to take off properly, or just sort of accept that you're making it for the art and you're not going to make a lot of money. I mean, X-Files residual checks are going to pay his bills for the rest of his life, so what does he care?
That's true too. I got to say, kudos though to Jillian, and I was always, yeah, distracted by always bringing her ethnicity into question, not because I did or didn't care. I'd see she was like the international star. She'd be in like a bunch of acclaimed stuff that you'd see playing on PBS, and the next thing you know, she's on some other, you know, cable TV show.
I think that as much as I like Duchovny, I think that Anderson is the like
dynamite
a more complicated, more versatile actress. And I think that's why, you know, it took a few years, but she's really got a good, you know, she's on that, what is the title of it? The First Lady or whatever it is, where she plays.
Have you seen that? It's wonderful.
I haven't. I've heard it's real good.
If she doesn't get an Eleanor Roosevelt nom, then I'm sorry. Life is dead. Like, she
there's so much TV to watch.
Well, and I can't blame it. There were other shows I'd seen parts of, wasn't impressed by, but she apparently had bit parts in, like War and Peace, like this new version that was on like A&E and History Channel, like back to back simultaneously. But yeah, she did The Fall, which was her attempt at doing another creepy serial killer procedural, and that was pretty good for 3 years. And then, yeah, she's briefly on Hannibal, which is just so funny because the whole character named Scully comes from Silence of the Lambs.
Hannibal is... how do I frame this?
Interesting.
Bad. Hannibal is a terrible show, but also an amazing show. It is the dumbest show you will ever see in your life, and God, I love it so much.
In all fairness,
Mads Mikkelsen.
Hot take: I'm not a Brian Fuller fan. I just didn't.
If you're not a Brian Fuller fan, you should not watch Hannibal, because it is almost excessively Brian Fuller. And he apparently likes it. He was on American
for the win.
She was also on American Gods at one point. I think she played Media. Sex Education is really big.
Four episodes. I still watch it. Oh, really? Okay. Well,
I've heard it's real good. Again, there's just so much TV to watch.
Too much. Was a fun show where she was, again, just... that she was the go-to play special federal agent in charge. Actually, no, she was a CEO of a company, but yeah, she was the sister of a federal agent, and it was another, again, conspiracy show. So it seemed like that's what it opened up. Just, if you're not going to do a costume drama or a British, you know, miniseries, wait, we needed to be in some giant event. And I had pals who unfortunately did not like, you know, any of those popular shows. They didn't do CSI after a while. They didn't do X-Files. They didn't do any easy to be addicted to TV show. And they knew about Jillian just because she would make so many, both she and Duchovny would make so many video game and cartoon like appearances. She even did a Princess Mononoke, you know, dub. So it's like,
She's real good in that too.
Oh yeah. She has an interesting voice because, and I think that's just it. Like you say, she is diverse, but you also don't know what kind of persona she's going to put on. Like, I see her in The Spy Who Dumped Me, and that was just a funny cameo. She's just like playing it's like a parody of a parody almost. Like, she's playing a special agent in charge, and then she's also just kind of just making fun of, but you know, you guys, you'll figure it out.
And speaking as a queer woman, the reaction that what's her name has to Gillian Anderson is extremely accurate. We're all just like, yes, hi, Gillian. Oh God, please don't listen to this, Gillian Anderson. Please don't know that I'm technically, she lived in the same town as me for several years, and I can't.
Chicago?
No, she lived in Darien, Connecticut, and I lived in Darien for several years.
Oh, damn. All right.
Don't recommend it. It's a terrible town.
Don't worry, I'm in Dallas, Texas, and that's where the explosion of the first movie takes place.
It does, that's right. That's where
they bragged about it. I'm like, this is not something to be proud of. Anytime an explosion goes down in Texas, it can't be good.
That's the scene where what's his name from Lost just watches the bomb go off.
John Locke himself. Terry O'Quinn.
Mm-hmm. Who's in like four different episodes of the X-Files playing completely different characters.
He shows up, he's been on all the Hawaii 5-0 NCIS shows, always playing a different character. He is on the CBS calling card.
I don't have a lot of, I don't have any connection to the X-Files movies, but obviously, you know, I was born in Alaska, so all of my friends and I were really big fans of the episode Ice. Because, you know, do you know how rarely stuff takes place in Alaska?
Not often.
It's not often. And I think the episode about the killer twins takes place in the next town over.
I think so. Where I live. Yeah.
Greenwich, yeah.
It's funny how that works.
they're naming real towns, and half the time you go and Google that town, like, just get the X-Files episode on Wikipedia.
That's how obscure it is. And it was kind of,
they just made it up.
They made it up, and then they basically just, they wanted a reason to incorporate all the, you know, it's filmed in Toronto, and they want to include all the Canadian sceneries. They're like, yeah, I guess it's Alaska.
I have a friend from Calgary, and he and I were chatting one time about the X-Files, because he's a huge X-Files fan. And he mentioned that in, I don't remember the title of it, the episode with the bees.
Oh, God, they replayed that one way too much. It's like
the first time they decided to bring up that, like, bees were involved, there's a bit where they basically had to make it actually set in Canada, even though Mulder and Scully have no jurisdiction there, because they accidentally used a truck with the logo for like the Canadian National Power Company.
Oh, so they had to digitally like modify it?
No, they just went with it. Like, oh, I guess this farm where Mulder's clone sister is in Toronto or wherever.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, there is a lot of unusual brands every once in a while, and you wonder, it's like, what are they implying here? And most of the guys probably didn't care. They're like, hey, free advertising. I don't care if everyone thinks we're run by actual aliens. That's for the nutcases.
they say that all press is good press, but like I know friends, I know people who used to work for like the Nielsen company doing really? Like survey, like they would their job would be literally like watching CSI or whatever, and did you notice what kind of truck agent what blah 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 was driving when he drove up? Did you notice the brand of sunglasses he put on before he quipped? So they do actually really care that you're noticing their brands.
They were just trying to look at statistics. Same thing with like websites, is like, is there an increase in traction because something is mentioned now? Is everyone trying to buy this item because they just saw it on a primetime show?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, wild. Years before, you know, Supernatural and Stargate Atlantis came out, I definitely think I gotta applaud X-Files for introducing us to the world of Skinner.
Mitch Pileggi. I love him.
Because, yeah.
Who's Julian, on Supernatural?
Yeah, he was like the granddad on that. And it's just so funny. We would always see, he's like on all other kinds of shows, like ever since Basic Instinct and like SVU, he just was always the go-to. He's gonna be the federal agent who just comes into town and visits everyone, and he's got the vibe, and people who don't watch TV know him as the, again, title villain in Wes Craven's Shocker, which is a movie that kind of like a lesser X-Files episode. It starts out pretty good, and then it just goes into just trashy territory due to too many rewrites and studio interference.
I love Wes Craven, but the man is hit or miss. And when he hits, and then he doesn't.
Shocker's like an in-between for me, because I think it's better than some of the lesser Nightmare on Elm Street type movie sequels, but man, it's just a shame, because like the movie, both halves of the movies just don't add up with each other. And the Lone Gunman, it's just so funny seeing them, all those free actors and other things, just they always pop up, and sometimes the joke is that they're like being mistaken for a conspiracy theorist. So it's just always just so funny how they pretty much had everything set in stone, just guest star on every other American or Canadian TV show, and then at the end of the day go to a convention, you know, signing Lone Gunman autographs.
I felt like when I first watched The Lone Gunman for the reviews, I was so sure that I knew the guy playing Jimmy from something. Turned out no, he's not been in anything else. And the lady playing Eves has been in even less. Yeah, they're just kind of, again, they're just kind of hanging around. You can get, they're interesting, because they were only in like 20 episodes of the show total. I know that sounds like a lot if you haven't, like, especially nowadays.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Before IMDb was a thing where you can now just click someone and see how many episodes they're in. Yeah, it's just, they were just featured guest stars, and they either saw, so did they see the fan mail and just say, hey, we better bring them back? Or did they already have that idea in place? We're going to keep bringing these guys back.
From what I know of TV appearances like that, basically what happens a lot of the time, like the really famous example of this is Spike from Buffy, because they brought him on for one episode. They had actually originally intended to kill him at the end of that first episode he was in. And then they got this guy here, and like, you know what? He's got something that's working for us. Let's see where that goes. And I think they just thought these guys were kind of fun and had a fun energy.
That's a good way to put it, because nothing really ever goes to plan. It's just, you see how everything reacts, and they had message boards back then.
Mm-hmm. So. And there, I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's like a controversial opinion. I actually kind of like the Lone Gunman spinoff.
I think a lot of people have grown to like it, but it's just one of those where it's just, when it was first announced, I think it was just, it got bogged, kind of like 24, because it was already a cool idea on paper. And then when it came out the same fall as 9/11, then everyone was just freaking out, making it something it wasn't. It's like, guys, it was in the can since last summer. You can't.
Yeah, that's rough. I do think, I have my theories about why The Lone Gunman failed. Part of it is just that I don't think Fox ever really knew what they were doing with it. But I also feel like, one, it shouldn't have been a 45-minute thing. It should have been like a 20-minute sitcom.
And a 20-minute sitcom would have been more fun.
And they just, I think that even, it doesn't feel like a cash grab. Like when you watch it, like Vince Gilligan is apparently, he doesn't mind getting questions about it, and he's still very proud of it. But I think that it came out at a point where the X-Files was so clearly like going off the rails that it felt like a cash grab from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I'd agree, because Millennium, this is a hot take, I think Millennium is actually the best of the franchise. Now, I have more fun with X-Files, but I mean, Millennium is just so much more just gritty, and like every gritty procedural on TV owes so much to it, because it goes into stuff that isn't really talked about much, like corporate, you know, contractors and private eyes who basically have to help feds with just other unexplainable stuff that, you know,
This might be a hot take, but I've never watched a single episode of Millennium.
I think you'd dig it.
I probably would. I'll give it a shot sometime. You know, a bunch of people asked me if I was.
It didn't help that it was kind of like Trilogy of Terror. It was just so. It freaked so many people out. Like when it replayed on FX, it was often like at 2 or 3 in the morning. It is so late. They were just afraid someone was going to get offended by it.
And I know that I watched. No, obviously I watched the episode that is the integrated series finale for Millennium. And that episode is not a good intro to the show because it just, here's this dude. He's real important, we promise. Stuff is happening. And then I go and ask my friends who have watched it, like, is any of this stuff from the show? And the answer is not really. Like, yeah. That Four Horsemen stuff isn't really from the show. It's just kind of there.
Frank Spotnitz, who wrote a shit ton of the episodes and now has gone on to have plenty of other success, like The Indian Detective, Ransom, and probably his best one to date, The Man in the High Castle, it's so funny. Like, on the DVD for Millennium, he says, I'm really glad I got another chance to revisit him. And then, you know, years later in the 2014 Millennium documentary, which everyone should watch, even if you haven't seen the show, he basically is like, yeah, I'm disappointed. It just wasn't my best hour revisiting the characters. I mean, they're all pretty close to the whole thing. They're too close at times to where it's just like, it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, it's not a prop. That's kind of how I just knew about it. I'm like, I didn't know that. I didn't know those two shows were connected. Oh, you know, because which is so funny because Millennium does feel a little bit like X-Files later in near the end of season 1 and even parts of season 2 where there's just more corporate just murders happening and other bizarre stuff. And
yeah. There's a Jose Chung episode in Millennium, right? That was actually written by Darren Morgan.
Right. Yeah. So there's Jose Chung. He's referencing X-Files and he's referencing that as the fictional Scientology equivalent guy.
Is he a Scientology equivalent guy in Millennium?
That's what he's supposedly inspired by, is he was meant to be L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, he's an L. Ron Hubbard parody? Oh, I didn't get that at all.
Me neither. So. I just thought, okay, it's just making fun of self-help guys who are quacks. I'm like,
He was a sci-fi. He was like a sci-fi author in the, I guess it might be different.
No, it's connected.
There's other parts of his character that are explored in Millennium, because in the X-Files episode he's in, he's mostly just a framing device interviewing Scully. God, that episode rules.
When does X-Files not rule, even when it's bad? it's just to see the show.
Queso dos Bichos does not rule. It is a very funny episode, but it does not rule.
Okay. what season is that one?
That's the season 3 episode with the cats.
Ooh.
Or Space. Space is another example of an episode that does not rule. Although its background is really funny. For those of you in the audience who don't know, Space is a season 1 episode that they wrote mostly to like cut their budget, because the last few episodes have gone over budget and they're like, we need something kind of cheap.
Right. So they went by Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fairly common tactic, you know. And then
Stargate would do that, where they would just do like recaps and just use like stock footage from other episodes. And I cannot watch those episodes now. I'm just like, I know, I just saw it 5 episodes ago.
Right. And it was probably more useful back when everyone didn't have like streaming. But the fun thing about Space is, so they designed this episode to be a really cheap episode. There's a lot of stock footage of spaceships taking off. And then the NASA set they built went stupidly over budget, and it was the most expensive episode of the season.
Oh, it did not work. Oh, it happens. Are there any other actors that you mainly try to seek out still? Like other than the leads, like it's just so funny how William B. Davis has kind of gotten out of just being the creepy guy out of X-Files. Like he was already a trained like stage actor when he got hired, and they didn't know until afterwards. And other than making fun of himself and Jay and Silent Bob, like that, the rest of the time he's kind of just done what typical Canadian actors do, being a big budget, Canadian produced like horror film or being a Sci-Fi Channel original movie?
There's a lot of guest stars that I kind of associate with the show because The X-Files was my first major exposure to them. Like, you know, Tony Todd is mostly associated as Candyman, but I first saw him in that one episode of The X-Files. You know, Brad Dourif didn't... I mean, he's still on that Chucky. They're doing a TV show of Chucky now.
Unfortunately, yeah.
I've heard good things about it, actually.
I can't get into it. It's so bad.
I don't like Chucky much. I never liked any of those movies. I kind of dug Seed a little bit, but only a little bit. But, you know, at this point, it's still doing its thing.
No, I'm
officially at, like, you know what? You're out here doing your thing. You shine on, you crazy diamond. You do whatever it is you're doing.
I mean, even over there, away from Master, millions of people will still show up, even if it's not good.
But, you know, I first saw Brad Dourif in The Two Towers, and then like a year later, I'm like, oh my god, there he is in The X-Files, and he's really good.
He kind of lucked out because, like, basically, he was just so good as part of the ensemble of Cuckoo's Nest, and then just recurring movie and TV roles after another. You know, Chucky kind of just was his movie stardom power, and then guest spots like X-Files and Babylon 5 helped, and then
Alien Resurrection.
Oh man, what a wacky movie. And then Lord of the Rings, Deadwood, and then even Star Trek Voyager, and then just nonstop, just back and forth. You don't know what he's gonna do. He's just so captivating regardless of the project. Been in a few David Lynch movies, and I'm trying to remember, was he on a Millennium episode? I think he was.
The one that
yes, that's right, he is. He's in a first season episode, and that's a creepy one too. It's so then you could do an argument, is he more creepy on the X-Files episode as Boggs, or is he creepy on the Millennium episode?
The one that I really like is, you know, everyone at this point I think knows that Vince Gilligan on the X-Files. And at one point, and see, they, you know, they just moved the X-Files shooting to LA, and you know what? Let's get the dad from Malcolm in the Middle, who's also shooting in LA, to shoot a guest star on the X-Files.
He almost didn't get it, and thank God he got it. But yeah, I mean, when you see how...
As they say, history.
But I mean, even one of the head X-Files and Star Trek writers, John Chabon, he did kind of some other movies like Rest Stop, which is not a very good slasher franchise, but he's been doing a lot of work on Better Call Saul lately, and basically that's just what Vince did. He was just a supporting writer who, along with Spotnitz and Morgan and James Wong, you know, when they weren't, all the rest of them were basically working on other TV shows or pitching ideas that became franchises from rejected X-Files episodes, like, you know, Final Destination, I'm Looking at You. and Vince basically just, I think the closest he gets to Breaking Bad level, other than just the typical kind of X-Files, just funny episodes, is probably on Lone Gunman. That's where he gets a little more experimental. And then he carried that with him with Breaking Bad. Is like, this is a show that defies a typical narrative. And
I think Vince Gilligan is a really talented guy. And I think that,
and a nice guy too, because you hear about so many other showrunners who are just, you know, scum of the earth. He's like, wow, they said that piggish statement. I'm like, damn, they're brilliant, but they're just
not good people. So much.
Yeah, Josh Whedon, what the hell, man?
but you know, I think you go back and you look at a lot of the episodes. He was either, you know, I think he was a really good producer. I think that he was one of the, from what I understand, I'm not an expert on the behind the scenes stuff, because I kind of like, when I'm doing a review, I try to like put that stuff out of my mind. Like, I'm writing a review of Bodies right now. I'm like, don't bring up the thing with the critic. It doesn't matter to the movie.
Don't bring it up. Half the time, like, before the internet got toxic, when you just heard about movies or shows, it was near impossible to find out, you know, like, is it hated because other people are jumping on the bandwagon or because the general just like public really has rejected it? They do not like it. And it, like you say, yeah, you can't bring it up without detracting from, hey, here's what I meant to do, which was sit down and actually review all of these.
And for those of you at home wondering, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies is pretty good.
Speaking of Bodies, there was a great X-Files site which would review every single episode, but it was also keeping track of the body count.
When I originally started, one of my ideas was like, keep track of all of the laws that Mulder and Scully break. And then I watched like two episodes and I was like, this is not doable.
More like every episode is going to happen there. You know?
It's going to have like five per episode.
And it doesn't really matter because at the end of the day, like no one's keeping track of whether they got a warrant or not. You know, the SWAT team doesn't see the crazy stuff that they see. So,
I am very aware of how much, you know, John Oliver literally this week did a show on Law and Order and the TV show Law and Order, talking about how it's so affected the way we view not only police but defense attorneys in America. And I feel like the one show that I can like excuse that for is the X-Files, because I'm like, if you think the FBI is actually out there tracking down fluke men and killer bugs from three different kinds of killer bugs, then you're too far gone already.
Right. And it's like Law and Order just pretty much will always have a giant amount of people tuned in. I'm one of them, just because it's different viewpoints and just various that they won't shy away from, hey, this is the district attorney's agenda and this is what the other attorney actually wants to do to bring the case down. But yeah, at the end of the day, they'll often lose the case or they'll be unsuccessful, which is way more realistic than, you know, the typical, hey, the super friends have come back to save the day. And yeah, X-Files are pretty much is like, they do, much like even William B. Davis himself, he got criticized for being a skeptic. And he's like, it's fiction, guys. There's just nothing else to it. Mm-hmm. Have fun.
Technically, X-Files and Law and Order take place in the same universe.
Yeah, exactly. Detective Munch.
Fucking Munch.
I'll give you a better one. So basically, Chicago Hope is often implied to be in the same universe as St. Elsewhere. And it was meant to cross over with its spinoff show, Picket Fence, is meant to cross over with X-Files. But there's several episodes where it's like they're doing just flat out like X-Files spoofs. It's like even using the theme. I'm like, yeah. For my money, they're pretty much all connected there, especially to that portion, even before you get to the Detective Munch.
The connection that I got really jazzed about when I found out the St. Elsewhere universe is, so Detective Munch shows up really briefly on an episode of Angel, which means that Buffy is in, but that's not even where I'm going with this. One of the evil law firm in Angel's clients is Weyland Yutani. So alien
and is connected.
They, at one point in Red Dwarf, they spot the ship from Alien in a ship graveyard. And you know what else they spot in that ship's graveyard? Have you ever watched Red Dwarf?
Yes, I love Red Dwarf. I have Firefly.
They spot the freaking TARDIS there.
There you go.
Goes all the way out that far.
Parody or not, they're connected.
Deal with that.
Deal with it. Firefly even sneaks in a Weyland logo in like the pilot.
I mean, I think that's one of those things. I think people in general take continuity too seriously. I think that, you know, I think that one of the things doesn't work at all.
I mean, Detective Munch in a Homicide episode even brings up people are watching the X-Files. And this is like, but see, here's the thing. X-Files is pretty much a mirror of real life. I mean, just even with the reality TV based episodes and how it's destroying society. I mean, I'm sure you remember the episode where they're seeing various celebrities and they're wondering if they're aliens or not. You know, it's kind of like Men in Black, where it's like you say, it's meant to be a little snarky and sarcastic, and it's like, just have fun.
I actually think that one of the things that kind of bogged the X-Files down at a certain point is trying to tie up continuity. Like, I think that actually one of the ways people should be trying to tie up continuity is just like, I don't know, dude was lying. Like, like one of the things that a bunch of X-Files fans have done for like years at this point, I used to be on those message boards. I remember people used to get really pissed about the episode where they reveal that Samantha has been dead the whole time. Because at one point in season two, the alien bounty hunter, like Mulder's having a fight with the alien bounty hunter.
Yeah, that was some casting. Brian Thompson from freaking...
Oh, he's great. He is top tier because he never has to say a word, so he just has to look menacing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he didn't even say a word in the original Terminator where he played one of the punks who got killed.
So they're having this fight. And I know that you know this, but I'm recapping it for the benefit of your audience. Yeah, and right. Mulder's like basically getting the shit kicked out of him and keeps asking her, where's my sister? And finally, the bounty hunter says, she's alive. Can you die now? And so we're like, why did he say that when it wasn't true? I'm like, because he was lying. Who cares? Who cares? It was the cool moment. Leave it alone.
It is what it is. It's like, they couldn't resist. They wanted to kind of keep. They kind of had to find out the hard way, and I would have had to find out the hard way as well. Just like, you never know until you know who wants certain stuff explained and who doesn't, you know.
I think, you know, you go and read, we were mentioned talking about Vince Gilligan a bit ago, and I think that one of the smartest things that Vince Gilligan learned from his time on the X-Files, and he brought this to Breaking Bad, is that, like he said, we really intensely plotted out season one. We had this really intense plot, and then turned out I really liked the guy playing Jesse, so I didn't want to kill him, which was our original plan.
The writer's strike happened, and yeah, he kept
Pinkman and alive. So they completely threw that out, and then they just plotted it more or less as they went.
And X-Files couldn't help it. They were, Chris Carter was just having so much trouble having to keep track of all the shows he had on, especially Harsh Realm, where he had some X-Files actors make cameos on there too. And it was just like, I think that's just it. I think all these guys got a little famous a little too quickly, and just kind of like how Duchovny was always, you know, just staying too busy for his own good and not balancing it out. I think Chris Carter, and I say this with love, I think he was too busy assigning everyone to both shows and just not able to keep up with all the storylines.
I think that the X-Files was never going to be a show with a very tight storyline.
How could it? Yeah.
Yeah, because they're telling the story in like 7-episode chunks spread out throughout a season, while they also have Mulder and Scully run around fighting monsters. And they got to do that more, because I don't know if I've ever met a person who says, no, I don't care about the monsters of the week. I'm just here for the larger overarching story. Like, I don't know what that would even say about you as a person. I've met people who are very much there for the Mulder and Scully romance.
I saw that, a lot of that too, as well as just people just wanted to see the shocking stuff that happened every episode. It's like, much like how the audience was so diverse, there was just no way to please everybody either. I don't say that as a cop out. It's just,
it's interesting to sort of know in retrospect how much the X-Files fandom sort of shaped modern fandom culture. Like, you know, the most common known term from fandom is shipping, you know, wanting two characters to get in a relationship. That came from the X-Files fan boards in the 90s. that they invented that term, not Kirk and Spock. Have a ship name?
Fans, man, bigger than the whole show.
And you know, on the note of Mulder and Scully's relationship, I think I have the story.
Is it Mulder and Scully or Scully and Mulder?
I think the story that I love to tell about them is a really good story to sort of end the podcast on, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine.
So I am bisexual, and viewing these two people as a young person very much helped me come to terms with that. So I'm sitting there one night, you know, maybe a little drunk, talking with my partner about how I'm really attracted to both of them, but I'm also really invested in their relationship. And they look me dead in the eye and go, "You want them to unicorn hunt you." Wow. Which for those of you who don't know is when a straight couple seeks out a bisexual woman for a threesome. I was like, shit, they read me. No.
You're not the only one who I know kind of came to terms with their sexuality.
Themselves, yeah, it was good for that. And I think that
because they were all atypical. Mulder was weird, but he wasn't necessarily the heroic guy who saved everybody. And
Scully is very clearly the tougher of the two.
She's the hero, and at the same time, like, she's more than just a very strong female. She's just someone who can approach any kind of belief, any kind of just fun, and it's just the rare kind of just fiction going beyond just the small screen or even the big screen.
And I think that they were very. I think that the other thing the X-Files did that I didn't think a lot of, like, you know, there's this old story that whenever, like, a sci-fi or a fantasy property, whenever the creators find out that a huge chunk of their fan base is women, or they start to go, like, what are we doing wrong? And I think one of the things the X-Files did well is they didn't do that. They didn't see, like, wow, there's a bunch of women who are really invested in this relationship. They didn't immediately try to start driving them away. They're like, no, these are people who are enjoying the show as intended.
Exactly. Oh my god. Yeah. Everyone likes to, long story short, a lot of the ones who say stop being political are the ones who made it political to begin with. Is like, this is fun. There's no harm in being progressive and making everyone so comfortable in their own skin. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Gillian Anderson is openly bisexual, which probably helped.
I think I did hear that. I didn't. That's where I was always getting confused, because sometimes she was making comments about men, and other times she's making comments about women, and I didn't follow her social life. I already liked her so much as an actress. I was just like, oh, well, then good for her, you know?
I think that I'm going to go ahead and tell you that if you are part of the queer community, I have heard of actors, you know, 6 months ago, I don't know what a Dove Cameron is. What's a Dove Cameron? She's on some Disney show? I am a 32-year-old woman. I haven't watched a Disney Channel show not this decade, not the decade before, nor the decade before that. But, you know, the moment she comes out, I heard about it. You hear it. All right, I think that's a good spot to end on.
Yeah, for now. I don't think we're going to get any deeper with all the other actors.
Yeah, I don't think that they're... I think that unfortunately, like, both fortunately and unfortunately, the X-Files didn't really have many other... Like, we could go through people who showed up on the X-Files and later became famous. You know, Jack Black's in an episode, Seth Green's in an episode.
Yeah, no, and all the other actors have appeared in so many other giant shows. I could just literally just do a segment about that and lean into it. Yeah,
I literally had a segment in my reviews where I would look over the cast of every single episode and go, well, that guy does this now. That guy's on Justified. Half the cast of Desperate Housewives is on one episode or another. There's another show I've never watched.
Wow.
I've heard it's good. I just never got around to it. You know?
Oh, but which one? Housewives or something else?
Desperate Housewives.
Okay, yeah. No, I couldn't get into it. But.
So you could do that, and I'm certain maybe you go find someone who's a huge fan of the X-Files and say, like, here is your
you're my number one. It's okay.
Here's your podcast pitch for you, Mr. Fan of the X-Files. You watch through those episodes and you do a play by play of all the other actors' IMDb profiles.
I've tried. I think.
Yeah, it's just too much. There's 218 episodes.
It's a fun thing to do, but yeah, I mean...
It's 218 episodes, and they had an Oscar-winning actress in either the first... In, like, the second episode, second or third. You know, you're never going to get through all that. What is it, the second or third? I'll be right. I'm going to Wikipedia to look that up.
Yeah, there's a bunch of great X-Files podcasts, but yeah, I've taken a while to actually get through all of those. So.
I actually don't listen to podcasts as much as I used to, because my new bus ride to class is like 5 minutes, so I don't have. Okay, it was Conduit. yeah, and okay, nominated. She the woman who played the mother in the fourth episode, got an Oscar nomination for Diary of a Mad Housewife in 1970. Carrie Snodgrass.
Wow. Another character actress. And that's the other funny thing is that sometimes people who are award winners, they just kind of disappear and just go back into doing TV instead of just have to do the giant movies. And are there any other books that you would like to promote? Ellie, before
books? I haven't really decided what my next writing project is going to be now that I'm done with all the X-Files reviews. You can find those. They're up online. I want to review.blogspot.com. If you follow me on Twitter at LSR42, ELESSAR42, I do this October, I'm going to be talking about 8 queer horror films. Let me get the list.
Nice.
I can go. Basically, one from each decade from the 60s on, and two for the 2010s, because when I got my list, it was over half the list was from the 2010s. Okay, so from the 60s, I'm watching The Haunting. From the 70s, and this is a title and a half, Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key. From the 80s, I'm going to be watching Cruising. From the 90s, I'm going to be watching Poison.
Nice.
2000, I'm watching Jennifer's Body. From the 2010s, I'm watching Lyle and Carmilla. And from the 2020s, I'm watching The Retreat. And I'm going to be talking about how queer horror has evolved over the course of the decades. I'm going to be watching some other films. Those are the ones that I've like committed myself to watch. But, you know, the 2017 queer horror film Thelma is one of my comfort movies. So I'll probably watch that at some point in October. And I think that it'll be.
I have heard of this one.
It's a great movie. If any of you have seen this year, Oscar nominated Norwegian film, The Worst Person in the World, which is a great movie. That was the director's movie from right before that. And Norway's weird. Norway puts out some good horror movies. I just want to talk about. So I'm going to be reviewing those 8 movies over the course of October. Once November hits, who knows? Who knows what I'm going to do? My partner keeps saying I should do the exact same thing I did with the X-Files, but for Seinfeld, and I don't want to do that.
If you want to listen to a great Seinfeld podcast, listen to Cartwright. That is by
Cartwright.
Right. That's on Blast for Our Past podcast network by the Podcasting After Dark guys. That's pretty funny.
You can just sort of follow me. I'm going to be writing going back to writing regular movie reviews. And, you know, you can probably find those on my Twitter as long as you don't get at me for not having scores, because I don't really do scores. And hey, that's it.
Glad I could have you on the show and just have a fun kind of just sit down.
Glad I could be here. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. I will check out the Oslo trilogy. The Worst Person in the World.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.